Cork sporting action at the weekend.
One goal to win the title. It's as simple as that.
Can you believe this?
Have you ever seen a trial like that?
The Big Red Bench.
On Cork, good times.
Red FM.
Welcome along to another show on the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour or so, taking you through all of the day's sporting action. Cork men's footballers losing out to Kerry, and of course the ladies winning their game against Waterford to come. But to the Premier League now. And earlier it finished Luton 1, Brentford 5. What a hammering it was there. Kat Sove with the full-time report from Kenilworth Road.
Finished Luton 1, Brentford 5, and there's a sombre mood among the home supporters here after missing the chance to climb out of the Premier League's relegation zone. A first half brace from Wisser, then two headers in as many minutes from Pinnock and Lewis Potter, and a powerful strike from Sharda gave the visitors an unassailable lead. Luton did get a consolation goal in the dying minutes of the match, with Berry tapping the ball into the back of the net. This convincing victory pretty much guarantees Brentford safety this season. Concerning times, though, for Rob Edwards' side, who remain in the bottom three with just four games to go. It finished Luton 1, Brentford 5.
Well, there was another hammering elsewhere as it finished Sheffield United 1, Burnley 4. Adam Diori has the full-time report from Bramall Lane.
1, Burnley 4. It could be a pivotal moment in the relegation battle as the Clarets cruised to victory. Burnley went 1-0 up on 38 through Bruun Larsson's deflected finish, and Asignon doubled that lead 2 minutes later. Sheffield United had to go for broke, and when Harmer curled one in on 52, it gave him a lifeline, but that vanished on 57 with a Foster tap-in, and then on 71, Goodmanson completed the rout to improve Burnley's survival hopes while pushing the Blades closer to the brink. Sheffield United 1, Burnley 4.
Wolverhampton Wanderers host Arsenal as the Gunners attempt to return to the top of the Premier League table. What a huge game it is for them tonight, where kickoff is at 7:30. Frank Watson is there for us at the Molyneux.
Wolves would appear to have little to play for compared to the visitors, and an already lengthy casualty list exacerbated further this week by injuries to Nelson Semedo and Mateus Cunha means boss Gary O'Neill looks certain to blood several youngsters tonight and in the next 7 busy days. For their part, Arsenal, whose confidence must have been severely dented by those 2 damaging defeats in the last week, simply must win tonight to maintain a realistic chance of claiming the league title. A clean sheet would help, and it would be a record 6th in successive away games in the top flight. 3 points will take the Gunners back to the summit, albeit temporarily. At Molyneux, it's a 7:30 kickoff for Wolves against Arsenal.
Now to domestic action earlier today. Rory caught up with hurling journalist Dennis Hurley, good name, to talk about Cork's hurling opener against rivals the Daisha in Walsh Park tomorrow. A highly enjoyable conversation about the Rebels. Enjoy.
All right, as Cork prepare to face Waterford tomorrow in their Munster Senior Hurling Championship opener, delighted to be joined by Dennis Hurley of The Echo. Dennis, thanks for joining us today on the Big Red Bench.
Hi Rory, delighted to be on.
Oh, thanks a million, bye. Let's go through this Cork team first off. Mark Coleman back after missing all of last year through injury. On his day, Mark Coleman, one of the best players in the country, so a massive, massive boost for Cork to have him back and back fit.
Yeah, definitely. Mark has been very unfortunate. Tomorrow, all going well, will be his first championship appearance since the All-Ireland quarter-final loss to Galway in June 2022, you know, which feels like a long time ago now. He missed all of last year with injury, and then just when he returned and played a couple of league matches this year, he suffered a fractured jaw on a training weekend in Kerry, and you're thinking, you know, you're fearing the worst again, but thankfully the recovery has been quick. I think people are probably surprised that he was named to start for Sunday, but obviously the management are satisfied that he has made a full recovery, and it's great to have him back, especially because with the way we'll be expecting Waterford to play, they're likely to have a sweeper, which would allow Mark to operate in a freer role, you would think, and hopefully kind of dictate the game in a playmaking position, which would hopefully bode well.
Yeah, a broken jaw does sound very serious. Like, I mean, like, is there any questions about his fitness, or is he 100% as far as you know?
No, it is 100%, yeah. Like in the week after the injury, Pat Ryan did say, you know, that it wasn't as bad as it could have been, or wasn't as bad as feared. And he was saying at that time back in March that if Mark had a chance of making Waterford, and would be definitely be available for the rest of the games. And thankfully, you know, it's turned out that way. And I think, you know, any Cork fans are at the very same back in action.
Alan Connolly making his first championship appearance as well since 2022 in that quarter final defeat to Galway. And he was in red hot form in the league, so a very exciting player for Cork. And they'll be looking to him in a big way this year.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know, 6 goals in 2 matches. I think that definitely lifted expectations. You know, people were glad to have him back anyway, because he's a real kind of direct attacker who'll go for the goal if he can. And, you know, Pat Ryan said at the Munster launch a few weeks ago that in order to get out of Munster, Cork would be needing to score 2 or 3 or even 4 goals in each match. And they were creating chances in the league. The conversion rate probably was a bit lower than what the management would have liked, but definitely having Evan is a huge asset in that regard. He scored a goal the last time Cork played in Walsh Park in 2022, a game where they were kind of going down, and it was win or bust after losing their opening 2 matches. And you'd be hoping, you know, that he can have a similar kind of an impact this weekend.
Yeah, and Sean Toomey in for his championship debut as well, as you said in your article yesterday. He did impress against Kilkenny League, sidelined after that, but certainly a very exciting player as well, Dennis.
Yeah, he was really good against Kilkenny, and it was a pity that, you know, he just had a hamstring problem that kept him out for the rest of the league. They were maybe hoping he might be back for the last match even against Wexford, but it was just a bit too quick for him. But he has impressed since then, obviously in training and in a match against Galway, a challenge match, the Cork won by a point or two. And you know, he's a guy who gives a real presence in the attack, and he can take his own scores, and he's another fellow with an eye for goal, as he's shown with Corsair Rovers in the county championship. But you know, he's a real hard worker, and he's excellent at helping others score. So I don't know if he'll spend the entire game inside in the full forward line, or if he'll kind of be drifting between the half forward line and full forward line just to give Cork an extra bit of presence there. But with him and Shane Barrett there are options. You know, they can kind of switch things if they need to during the game, and obviously then you've guys, you know, who can come off the bench and have an impact as well.
Overall, Dennis, how impressed were you by Cork with their league campaign, and how well set up are they for this championship run now?
I think you'd be fairly encouraged by the league. The view might have been coloured after the first couple of matches when they lost to Clare and not to Kilkenny. But even with those matches where they kind of had 15 minute zone out periods, they were within a score both times. They lost to Clare by 3 and not to Kilkenny by 1. And since then, against Waterford, they had a bit of a zone out too, but so had Waterford, and Cork was less serious, and they won that, and then they beat Offaly in Wexford, which I suppose you'd be expecting them to do. But if you were told you'd lose 2 matches in the league and win 3, you'd kind of choose to do it the way Cork have done, and have the form graph pointing upwards at the end. And you know, they got to look at players and got to kind of land on what they feel is their strongest 15 at the moment. Obviously that can change as the round robin goes on, but I think they're fairly well set, yeah.
And what are we expecting from Waterford now, obviously managed by Dave Fitzgerald, so we know he'll have them fired up and ready to run through a wall tomorrow, but what are we expecting from them?
Well, their league was a bit like Cork's, but it probably just finished worse. They were patchy, and they were struggling with in games after half time, just kind of being overrun by the opposition, and it cost them nearly every match, and David Fitzgerald couldn't put his finger on it. But they were missing a lot of players during the league. They have most of them back now. They've named a strong team for Sunday. Looking at the 15, and like we were saying earlier, you'd expect Callum Lyons probably to drop back into the fence, and you know, in a tighter Walsh Park pitch, they'll be looking to stifle Cork and then hit them on the break. And you know, we know how good they can be at that. You know, because they have guys in attack who can really punish you. You know, they've Desi Hutchinson, Stephen Bennett, Jack Prendergast, and then even the likes of Patrick Fitzgerald or Patrick Curran to come off the bench. So just because they might be set up. And what we look at a defensive mode, that doesn't mean that they can't get scores. And you know, they showed last year against Limerick in the first match, they ran them close, they only lost by 2 points, and that was with Tadhg De Burka being injured early on. He's obviously back to anchor their defence now. You know, everyone knows David Fitzgerald has been tagged in this match from way out. You know, it's a home game, it's the first match, you know, to lay down a marker. Waterford aren't playing next weekend either, which just gives them that extra bit of recovery time and a chance to really just go bald headed for it. Cork have Clare the following Sunday, which doesn't mean that they won't be going full blooded, but it's just something in the back of the mind, you know, in terms of however Sunday goes, they must turn around and reassess and focus on that. Obviously, the results on Sunday's two matches, Waterford Cork and Clare Limerick, will determine, you know, the context in which the following week's games go. You know, Cork and Clare and Limerick and Tipperary. Mm-hmm. So it's a fascinating, you know, fascinating to kind of just look at it and see how things will go. And it, you know, I think definitely the round robin has improved the Munster Championship. And, you know, and it's so tight and stays in balance for so long. You know, it's what we've been waiting for since the start of the year, and I think we're all excited now that it's here.
Yeah, we certainly are. John Horgan says Cork are going to win by 5 points tomorrow in the Echo. Would you be as confident?
Maybe not 5 points, but I do think Cork will edge it. I think there's a deep resolve there. They know that they have to start with a win if they do want to improve, unless you're showing and get out of the group. And just leaves them well set then for the visit of Clare the following week.
Finally, Dennis, I suppose like the championship starting in April is still a bit odd, I think. Still seems very, very early in the season. Gerlach Burns was saying, or in the week, that the All-Ireland football and hurling finals could return to September. There seemed to be kind of a lot of support for that as well.
There seems to be a lot of support for it in the media, definitely, among high-profile pundits. I think if you ask the majority of GAA players, club and county, they'd say that they like the split season in that it gives clarity and it just avoids fixture pile-ups, and you know, you don't have guys being out of action for 12 or 13 weeks and then having to play 4 or 5 weeks in a row. So it's very difficult to resolve the issue to everyone's satisfaction, obviously from an emotive point of view. The idea of finals in September is, you know, is something that we've all grown up with. Yeah. And there's a nostalgia there. But, you know, from a purely kind of rational and logical point of view, I don't see a whole lot wrong with having the finals in late July when the weather should be at its best. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, you're starting in April, which does still feel a bit strange. But I don't know if there's a better way that kind of ticks the most boxes at the moment. It was interesting to hear Gerlach Burns say that. I'm not sure if he said it at any stage during his candidacy, but I suppose, you know, you're the president for all the people and you want to kind of satisfy as many people as you can. So it'll be interesting to see what moves are made. But, you know, I think you do have to bear in mind the large silent majority of club players and make sure that they're not disenfranchised.
Excellent. All right, Dennis, thanks for joining us today and enjoy the game tomorrow.
Great stuff out of Dennis there. Sticking with Gaelic Games action, the Cork under-20s were beaten by Kerry on Wednesday night in the Airgrid Munster under-20 football championship. The Kingdom running out 1-12-11 point winners in Super Value Parky Heave. Cormac Dillon scoring 1-5 for Kerry there. And Cork face Clare next Wednesday evening, knowing that a win will book a Munster final spot. Our man, Ger McCarthy, spoke to Cork boss, Ray O'Mahony.
Okay, obviously disappointment. That second quarter when you struggled to get a score for about 15 minutes, was that the turning point as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, I think it was. Like, against the wind, we were about 6-3 up. And I thought we were in a good position. We were reasonably comfortable. We were using the ball well. But I just think we just a few mistakes too many that we gave them they turned us over. It was cheap turnovers and they went down the field and got scores. I reckon roughly over the game they got about 1-5, 1-6 from our mistakes, you know. But look, mistakes are going to happen in games. It's never going to be a perfect performance every time, but you're just trying to eliminate the mistakes for the next day, you know.
In terms of sloppiness, that's something you were getting frustrated on the side and you were getting into good positions. The moves were working. Was it just that final third too often that ball didn't go to hand?
Yeah, look, we got the ball in, just maybe it wasn't sticking at times, like, you know, and then Kerry were getting the extra body back there, like, you know. But when it did go in, maybe it wasn't sticking to the shooters as well, you know. But look, we're still in the Munster Championship. We've Clare coming to town next week. We'll focus on that and we'll see what takes us from there then, you know.
And of course, the goal as well, was that the big turning point in the game? And that came from a turnover as well when Cork were on the attack.
Yeah, look, Copsey made a brilliant run up the middle and he went through on goal. We just were disappointed that someone didn't come around on the loop to just pull it over the bar. He gets turned over. It was a free, can't really call it now. But they go down, you know, within 20 seconds, the ball's in the back of the net, like, you know. And that was certainly the turning point in the first half, like, you know.
Disappointing way, but after a strong opening to the game as well, like, you know, we really... started on the front foot.
Yeah, against the wind, I thought we'd done very well. We moved the ball well. We were causing them problems in their full back line. They had to make changes. They made an early switch in the first half. They brought on one of their danger men. They brought a foot in, they started him at centre forward. But look, they clawed their way back into it. I think a lot of the way through some of our mistakes. But we can't question the lads for endeavour and effort and character, like, you know. We kept going to the end, you know. Maybe we were unlucky there when that diagonal ball went in, trying to get that equalising goal, like, you know. We were just a bit unlucky there. Had a few 50-50 calls didn't go our way with the referee as well, if you don't mind me saying. But look, they're going to make mistakes as well. That's the way it goes, like, you know. But look, we're still in phase two of the Munster Championship, and we'll roll on to next Wednesday.
Were you a bit disappointed, Ray, that after you got the first two scores of the second half to bring it back to a point, that it was Kerry then who got four on the trot? And that was kind of the winning of the game. It gave them that cushion.
Yeah, they won the game. Kerry got a positive result out of that match in two phases, in my opinion. They got it in the last 10 minutes of the first half, and the 4 points in the bounce. Then when we had them on the racks, I thought, you know, they looked on edge. We were causing them problems, you know. But just, you know, few little mistakes. But look, we've plenty to work on now in the next week. We've learned loads from that match, which is really important for us, like, you know, as a group. To see where we go forward with this, like, you know.
Was it a bit of a phony war tonight? Obviously, you know, probably that you're going to be playing each other again in 2 weeks' time.
Well, look, sport can be very funny, you know. You can see all the shocks that happen, and the way, you know, teams not expected to win can give you know, favourites hammerings and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, Kerry didn't come down here to lose. We didn't come here to lose, and they came out 4 points better. Were they 4 points a better team? I'm not so sure, but we'll go again next week against Clare.
It enjoys the new format now, is you're still alive, and you'll take a lot of positives out of tonight's game.
Yeah, loads of positives. Like, we play some lovely football there at times when we move the ball quick. But when we're at our best, I just don't think we showed the crowd, the Cork supporters today, what we actually are capable of doing, you know. I don't know, were they a bit flat after the week's training? I'm not so sure. I'm not making excuses. You know, Kerry are in the same situation. They've travelled now twice for the two matches. So, but look, we'll dust ourselves down and we'll go again now next week. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Ed, just focus on Clare now. It's a quick turnaround, isn't it, now after...
Yeah, look, this is like a pinball machine. This tournament, like, there's no right way or wrong way of doing it. But, you know, it's like Clare and Tip will have played six competitive matches within 6.5 weeks, like, which is brilliant for the development of those players, like, and we'll definitely have three, hopefully four, and like, it'll be just week on, you know. Like, I mean, these are amateur players living lives of professionals, if you ask me, and I think at the end of the day, you know, they're a credit to their clubs, their families, like, the effort that they've put in. I know I can't question it. Everything we've asked them, they've given us, you know. And we'll try and rock on for next week.
Great stuff out of Ray. Just seeing the FA Cup semi-final at halftime. The score is Chelsea 0, Man City 0, if you have an interest in that one. But back to the Gaelic football now, and you're also heard from Kerry boss Tomás O'Shea.
Okay, Tomás, first of all, congratulations. Good win, good performance. But how important was that goal just before halftime?
That was huge. It was absolutely massive because we were struggling in an awful amount of periods in that first half. We were struggling with Cork's kick out. We were struggling with the space that was being created inside. They have some excellent footballers, some excellent scoring footballers inside. And Cork were in control for most of that half. I think that goal was a huge help for us, but also getting them in at half time and getting reorganised. And I think they gave a better performance in the second half, but an awful amount of work still to do, George. You know, they were not, geez, like, and I know Cork can as well. And you know, both teams have another game next week, and I'm pretty sure both teams will be focusing in hard on that game and getting a win there. And that's the main point. But it was good to get the win, but an awful lot of work still to improve on.
You held Cork scores for 15 minutes there in the second quarter, which was really good. Your defenders really came into it. How important was that platform then? Because, as you said, I thought you were far more in control in the second period.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, everybody knows, and it's not me blowing them up, but we know that the Cork forwards are good and they're handy, and I've seen them at college's level, I've seen them at school's level and club level, and we always knew that our backs were going to have a massive performance. But it wasn't only the backs, it was the lads outside in the middle of the park slowing stuff down and tackling and harrying and chasing. So, you know, they did it for an amount of time, but there were occasions as well where Cork... And look, I don't think Cork had their strongest team out either. So, I mean, that's something else that will put fire in their bellies if we meet again. So, yeah, we're happy to get out of here with a win, and that'll be it.
How happy are you with the format, finally, just at the Under-20 Championship this year? Like, you're guaranteed, you know, before it used to be knockout, but now your players have got dates, you've got different games to play and work towards as a management team as well. Have you seen it benefit the players just playing those extra games?
I think it is. I think, look, compared to last year, it was a potential knockout in the first game, you know, depending on who you played. Or I think it's better, but I think it could be even better. I think it's very squashed. You're training for an amount of time. I'm not sure has it got the proper window. It's a brilliant championship. It's brilliant football when you watch it. It's not as tight or as organised. We don't have the time with the players to get set plays or set pieces in terms of complete defence. So it's more open and it's good to watch. But yeah, look, it comes back to the numbers in the provinces. You're going to have whatever style. Connacht is the only one I'd look at. You know, they seem to have games, but I know where Munster are coming from. It's better than it was last year, George, so that's good for us.
Thanks very much.
No bother.
From Gaelic football to football now, and ahead of Cork City's game versus Longford away from home in Bishopsgate at 7:30 tonight, we hear a press conference with boss Tim Clancy that our very own Conor O'Sullivan attended for us.
Listen, it's not really. Obviously, we would have been at home tomorrow night, but it's been changed to Saturday down in Longford. It's just, listen, it is what it is. It's another away game, but it's, as I said previously, we're going to have to pay everyone away, home and away twice. So, it just means that we're not going to be in front of the fans for a few more weeks. But, listen, we got a good result, a positive result up in UCD, who I think are a very strong team. And we were pushing towards the end of that game to win the game. So, I think it was a good result, and we went and watched Longford then on Saturday night. Saturday night against Bray, and we seen them again on Tuesday down in Wexford. So it was good to get eyes on them twice before our game on Saturday.
And you've been up there already this season, obviously, had a 2-0 win, so you know what to expect from Longford, and I mean, you're up there sooner than you'd have thought again, but you certainly have a good experience up there earlier on the season.
I think this has changed, obviously, with Hendo leaving. And Wayne Groves taking over. So I seen on Tuesday Wayne made a few changes, and again they brought Jordan Eddie Amo in. He came on and scored the equaliser, and Ross Fakin back in and played very well in the deeper midfield role. So there was a few tweaks, obviously, from previous weeks. I know Wayne well as well. We worked together at Drogheda for 3 or 4 years, so it'll be good to see him on Saturday as well. And I know his team will want to try and play good football as well.
When there's a change of manager, there's often a bit of an oomph with a team again. Like, I mean, they came back 2-0 down the other night, so they might have that bit of fight about them at the moment, do you think?
Yeah, again, there's a lot of cliches and all that sort of stuff, but there is no easy games. There's been very competitive in every game in the first round. So again, I'd imagine that now it's the first home game since there was a change of manager, and I know Wayne's. He's taken it temporarily at the minute, but I've no doubt they have to get more positive results. There's no reason why they shouldn't give him the job as well. He's very knowledgeable in regards to the young players in this country and the development of young players. He's done exceptional work at multiple clubs now with young players. So they had a good reaction on Tuesday night going away from home to Wexford, which is not an easy place to go. And they found themselves 2-0 down and they got back to 2-2. So this one we're going to be expecting from the very start on Saturday night to be a really, really tough game.
And just in terms of the squad, have you anything to worry about injury-wise, anything like that?
No, I think Conor Drennan's back now, trained a good few weeks. Darragh Crowley's now had the minutes in the 20s in the last couple of weeks, so he's ready to go now as well. So no, there's none really. Malik is now striking balls, sprinting, twisting and turning, so he's very close to being back into full training, and that'll be a full squad bar young Matty Kiernan as well, who is still a couple of weeks away from his fracture he got in his leg against Kerry. I think if you look at the games we have played away from home, I know we've only won one of the five games away, but we've also drawn the other ones, and listen, we drew away to Finn Harps, which isn't easy, away to UCD, which isn't easy, away to Treaty, who had won 3 out of 3 at the time as well. So they're not easy games that we've drawn either. It's good results. I think the really pleasing thing with the UCD game was we didn't look like conceding at any stage. Could have possibly done a little more in the final third, but we looked very solid again. And I thought the impact from the bench was good in regards to Jaden had a couple of half chances. Nathan was positive when he came on, and Josh and Sean Murray as well done very well. So we're looking to go into the game on Saturday night, and we're hoping that we can go and try and collect 3 points and then prepare for the following week. Listen, I hope we can get back in as soon as possible. And listen, again, if you've even seen from the Cove game, I think we've only had probably 2 days of rain. The rest of it's been dry, so that's going to help as well. It was freaky about the rainfall for this season, this year so far, sorry. And again, listen, we want to get back in front of our own crowd again as much as possible. We've had really good form there this season. It's no coincidence when we're getting the crowds that we're getting, and the players are responding to that. So hopefully we can get back in as soon as possible. Listen, if you offer me to be 4 points clear now after 36 games, I take it. So it's good. It's a good start. We're not getting carried away with ourselves. We still feel we can improve on certain things. But sitting here after 10 games, being 4 points clear, I'm absolutely delighted with the start of the season and how the players have responded to what we want to do and what they've created themselves as well in regards to the atmosphere in the dressing room. It's really good at the minute, and we want to try now and make that 11 games unbeaten and try and just continue on game by game.
Best of luck to Cork City tonight. I think our only away win of the year came against Longford, actually, so hopefully a similar result against them later. You're listening to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you. After the break, we'll be getting the reaction from the ladies footballers' win over Waterford, as well as hearing from a young author after publishing his first book. Talk soon.
The Big Red Bench.
Cork's Good Times.
Red FM.
FM.
Welcome back to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times. Red FM. Dan Casey with you. Now, during the week, I sat down with young journalist and now author Dylan O'Connell to talk about the creation of his book, The Ajax Way, How One Football Club Defines the Modern Game. Enjoy, and be sure to get yourself a copy if you have any interest. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by the author of The Ajax Way, How One Football Club Defines the Modern Game. That author is Dylan O'Connell. Dylan, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Why the Ajax Way? You know, why not the Cork City Way? Why not the Liverpool Way, the Man United Way? Why is it the Ajax?
Because I think they may be the most influential football club in the world. And I'm not an Ajax fan. I just took a huge interest in this football club. And like, my bread and butter is always youth development. It's always interests me how a player can go from playing with an under-17s team to an under-19s team to senior football, because you know yourself, making that transition is huge. You always hear about players who are coming through, then they don't make it. Then there's Ajax, who bring through young players, and then those young players are becoming some of the greatest coaches in the modern game. If you look at the likes of Louis van Gaal, Johan Cruyff influenced, likes of Pep Guardiola, like, it's just, the story's huge. And I was actually shocked when I started researching it, the fact that no one has written this full story before.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think it is Ajax in particular? Why is it just that part of Amsterdam for some reason?
I think it's more like you have to be in the right place at the right time. Like if you look at the Celtic team that won the European Cup in 1967, they all lived within like 30 miles of Glasgow. If they all wore a Rangers jersey at that time, would they have won the European Cup at that same time playing for the same club? So a lot of factors came together at the right time in Amsterdam. But then again, for the whole thing to start, it started in the mid-60s when Rhys Mitchells took over the team. But then that kind of project was helped on by two local men who wanted to launder reputation after they helped the Nazis during the Second World War when they occupied Amsterdam. But again, that's a whole story unto itself. But a lot of it was the right place, the right time. Mitchells ended up influencing Cruyff. Cruyff had his own ideas. He brought them to Barcelona. He then brought them to his first stint at Ajax. Then his stint at Ajax as coach. And then he brought them to Barcelona. At Barcelona, he influenced the likes of Ronald Koeman, Pep Guardiola, obviously. And then this whole kind of culture that's developed at Ajax ended up influencing people like Frank Rijkaard, and then kind of the domino started falling from there.
Have you seen Ajax play yourself?
I haven't seen them play in the flesh. I tried to get over there 3 or 4 times for a game, and every time I tried to get over there, something kept inspiring to get in my way. And I remember one time, it was before they played, remember that crazy game against Chelsea in the Champions League, the 4-4 draw? I was over there a few days before that and trying to get a ticket to a league game, and someone got that thing for a ticket for Stamford Bridge. So any chance of me trying to trying to play that whole like, oh please, I travelled all the way from Cork in Ireland for this game, please, was blown out of the water when someone started shouting at them saying, but I really, really, really want to see this game. A shouting match broke out and I kind of had to leave really awkwardly. Anyway, that's a bit of a tangent, but yeah.
Yeah, and why, and like, I know you were saying how influential they are. You must have been really passionate about them if you're to write a whole book about it.
I think my thing was always football and tactics and how the game is played. Where like, I love watching a game for how it's played as opposed to the players on the pitch. Where like, you know, certain people, like, they just want to see...
not very boring?
It is and it isn't. Like, if you see a game where, like, let's say a team is playing 3-4-3 and then the opposition switches to 3-4-3 and then that stops the overlapping fullbacks creating space and an overlap in wide positions, I find that so interesting. And I suppose it's just how I watch football, where like everyone watches it through their own things. Certain people follow one club. Certain people like watching football just because it helps them forget about everything in the world. And I just like the tactic side of things. Like my favourite book, and I think the book that opened up my eyes, and I'd say everyone's probably heard of this, is Inverting the Pyramid. There's even an episode of Ted Lasso based on it. I think that was like a switch went to my head and I was like, this is like the greatest thing I've ever, like, just this way of watching football was just incredible. And I think when you start looking at the game through a tactics lens, it's... because you're not going to say Ajax invented tactics. They didn't, because you look at the likes of, let's say, Arsenal with Herbert Chapman, with the whole like, he basically tied like a rope to them so they play in the WM formation. But it's the fact that Ajax did what they did while playing this beautiful expressive football in the 1970s, when if you look at like, let's say the way English football was played, it was just, let's hack players down and hope for the best. Like, I apologise now for going on about it, but like, I think the best example of like their beautiful style of play was in the 1970. They reached the semi-finals of the Interferes City Cup, which was like a precursor towards the Europa League or UEFA Cup as well. And they played Arsenal, and the Arsenal player's strategy, as quoted in a few of their autobiographies, is let's kick them as much as we possibly can while Ajax are trying to pass the ball out. Arsenal got the win, so I know, I mean, you can write the most lovely poems as you want, though, but then you could 2-foot tackle someone, it makes no difference.
How did you break down the chapters in the book? How did you go about writing chapter by chapter? Is it based on people or based on tactics? What way did you do it?
I did it by starting out with how Ajax reformed as a club, and then kind of like, you know, went from there. Because like, there actually originally was Jack Kerwin. He was their first kind of trainer, because the word manager wasn't used in the Netherlands for about 50 years. And it kind of like went from there then, and the more you read, the kind of more tread you started to follow then. In fact, funny enough, actually, the first chapter I actually wrote was about Bayern Munich. Because Bayern Munich in 2008, 2009, they realised they needed an identity on the pitch and they wanted to overhaul the style of play that was played at the Allianz, and that led them to bringing in Louis van Gaal, because they liked Louis van Gaal's style of play, which is the Ajax way.
Who do you think is the most influential person in Ajax's history?
Rhys Mitchells, because without him you wouldn't have had Cruyff. Mm-hmm. And so I think I might go as far as to say is he's probably the most influential figure in European football for the last 50 years, because Klopp plays a brand of football which involves passing it out from the back, and Jurgen Klopp as an example. Jurgen Klopp is influenced by Sacchi, who won back-to-back European Cups in 89 and 90 with AC Milan. And Sacchi's biggest influence, which is in his book The Invincibles, is Ajax. So everything in a sense goes back to Ajax and Mitchells.
Is this your first book, Dylan?
It is. I was originally writing a book about the League of Ireland during the lockdown, and that's it's essentially finished, but it was then the Ajax one kind of caught light in my head, and I was like, okay, I need to, I suppose, just get this out of my system. And I think over the space of 8 months, it was just long days in the library. Like, you know, some people started a podcast during lockdown. Mine was just more accidentally writing two books.
Very good. I suppose, well, I'm looking at it here. One thing I'm struck about it is just the quality of it. I mean, the cover is absolutely fantastic. I mean, for your first go out, it's certainly a nice one.
Yeah, like, it's the production of the book, the cover of the book, and I think that's something that's really important, because, like, you know, you could write a book about anything, but I think it kind of reflects the Ajax story, the fact that how expressive they were, the fact that they kind of embodied, I suppose, they embodied the 60s, and they became this, like, this, they're in the right time at the right place of beauty and self-expression. And one thing I really like with the cover of the book, because it kind of sums up that to a little extent, because, like, this is a political message, by the way, when the provost liberated kind of Amsterdam, the kind of social conservatism, that's not the provisional IRA, it's the provost with their name. They happen to be existing the exact same time, and there's a group of hippies in Amsterdam in the 60s. They're the reason why the city is what it is today. They kind of forced the city into kind of going, okay, like, there was a quote back then of, like, Amsterdam was a boring city with the same rain falling the same canals, and within 10 years became, like, the city it is today because of the actions of the provost. And Ajax were kind of seen as, like, the supporting representative of that. And I like the fact that kind of cover the book is creative, it's colourful, it's very well done, and it kind of mirrors that a little bit, which I quite like.
Is there going to be a launch for this book? Not to put you under pressure now.
No, is there? Yeah, there is. There will be a launch on the 8th of May in Waterstones at 6:30. So all is welcome. And if you don't even like the book and want to come and throw eggs at me, actually don't do that.
But I will do that.
Go on.
I like the book, but throw eggs at you.
Hopefully they're Easter eggs. But but it's a really exciting time, because especially with Ajax, actually the book's coming at the worst possible time for Ajax. If it was 4 years ago, it would be like the hottest thing in the market. And now they just got, I think they got beaten 6 or 7 last week by Feyenoord, who'd be their most hated rivals. So it's a bit like releasing a book about Manchester United about 2 years ago when they got lost 7-0 and 5-0 to Liverpool. So it's, yeah.
Well, obviously, we can get the book at the launch, but where else can we get it in the meantime?
Yeah, so it's available in Amazon, Waterstones, wherever books are sold, which is quite nice. If you have a Kindle, you can get it for your Kindle, so you can read it in your phone or your Kindle. So if you go on to pitchpublishing.com, you can get the book off the publisher there. So it's wherever books are sold.
Dylan, thanks a million. Appreciate it. Ah. Words of Father Tate. Good luck with the book.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck to Dylan. A reminder, the book launch is in Waterstones on 8th of May at 6:30, I should say. And he'll be there with our very own Rory O'Hagan. Now, earlier today, our very own Ger McCarthy saw the Cork Ladies footballers defeat Waterford in Dungarvan on a scoreline of 110 to 11 points. A close encounter in their opening round of Munster. And afterwards, he caught up with the Rebels' Myra O'Callaghan and Laura O'Mahony.
Now I'm joined by the Cork LGFA senior captain Maura Callan and the goal scorer from today's win over Waterford, Laura O'Mahony. Laura, first of all, congratulations. Big, big win for Cork, and your goal was important, but Waterford really did put it up to you today.
Yeah, definitely. And look, we knew that they would as well. They're a good team and they beat us by a substantial amount a few weeks ago. So I think we owed it to ourselves and the management to just make the wrongs right. I think we're also proud of everyone's work rate and how we played on the pitch today. Look, we gave it everything and we came out with the win, which we needed.
How much was the motivation for that poor league performance, that league season that coming into today? You wanted, as you said, to wrong the rights, but how important was it that you get off the ground running?
Yeah, look, I think we've put in a good solid few weeks now. We've put in hard work and I think we owed it to ourselves, all that hard work, that we could come out and just look past the league. We were never looking back at it anyway. We just wanted to look forward to the Munster Championship, which is most important.
Right place at the right time to get that rebound from Libby's shot. Was she give you out afterwards?
No, look, I think she missed on purpose. She wanted me to get a bit of glory.
Good stuff. Maura Callan as captain. This team needed this victory today, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all absolutely delighted with that. Like, you know, you can't beat the winning feeling after we'd put in, as Laura said, really hard couple of weeks together to really get ourselves ready for this game. So, look, if you could bottle that up afterwards, I think you can't beat a good win together. And look, it was really tight. It really did come down to the wire there at the end. You know, I suppose we're probably ruining a few chances that we could have taken, but we still ground out the result. And I think we're all delighted with that. I suppose, you know, we hadn't felt that winning feeling since the first game of the league. So, look, it's a welcome feeling. got to have it back.
Your defence as well today, Maura, which you were a part of, was very, very important because Waterford had plenty of chances, but you've forced them wide, forced them to kick a lot of wides, and that's going to be important going forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it's something we're working on, obviously, to try and be watertight at the back. And look, we'll be happy with you know, what we give away today. You know, it was a low enough scores for Waterford, and I suppose any shot that was taken, there was pressure on it, and there was a good few blocks as well. So look, I suppose it's a work in progress, that defence, we're getting used to it. But look, we'll be happy with how we did today on it.
Next up, it doesn't get any easier, your old friends Kerry from over the border, away from home as well. How much of a boost now is it going into that big game, having a victory under the belts?
Yeah, it's a huge boost. I mean, you know, the first game of the championship is always a bit dicey. Like, you know, you're kind of nervous, I suppose, and it's obviously natural to be nervous. But look, at least we've that monkey off the back. The first game is done now, and thankfully we got a good result. So we'll be, you know, bouncing into next weekend against Kerry.
And this, as you said, like the momentum that you've gained, the time you've had together to train together to get ready for this, you're going to need to up it again against Kerry.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I suppose that's the plan. We want to, you know, take it up another level with every game we play. So I think we're very happy with the baseline we got there today against Waterford, and we'll be hoping to rise it again against Kerry.
Same for you, Laura. Obviously, this is another step up now. Again, they don't get any harder than one of the All-Ireland contenders, but, you know, with the momentum, hopefully, that you've gained from this afternoon's win over Waterford, just looking to kick on.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's important as well for the week ahead that we just focus on ourselves, build on today, look at things that we could potentially improve on for our next week, and just keep on looking at ourselves, I think.
Does it matter where it's played? I mean, away from home means it's with a bit of pressure on them?
No, I suppose in the end of the day, it's four lines enclosing a pitch, two goalposts, so it doesn't really matter to us anyway, I think.
Okay. Well, congratulations, Mark. Congratulations, Laura. Well done.
Thanks, Joe.
You're also caught up with Cork boss Shane Ronan.
Shane Ronan, a well-earned and a hard-earned victory today against Waterford, but how important was that block of time that you've had since the end of the National League with the players? Because today, both defensively and in attack, you seem to be much, much better.
Yeah, look, I suppose we were trying to implement something during the league that I suppose maybe didn't come off, because, you know, you're going week to week and you haven't got a lot of time with the players, and there was other things going on with, you know, a kind of cup and things like that. And so today, you know, we've done a lot of work in the last 4 weeks, and the girls have put in phenomenal efforts. There's been a lot of work done by the management as well behind the scenes, looking at what way we should play and what we should be doing. And I think, you know, you saw the fruits of that today. And I think, look, I think we can get better than that. You know, we missed a good few chances out there, left a good few scores behind us. But look, I think it will only improve. The confidence is back now, you know. That group in there and management as well have been absolutely suffering, George, since 20th of January. It's been really tough going. A lot of rubbish spoke about us and spoke about what we're doing and what players we have and what players we don't have. Those players in there have put in phenomenal effort. I'm so, so proud of them. I said to them inside there, I've had very good days with Cork. I stood in the line with an 8 a.m. and Ryan and won our lines with him. And today is one of the proudest days I've had because of what these girls have gone through for the last few months and what the management have gone through as well. And look, we're so, so happy with them. And a huge effort today. Our girl physio, Katie Nagel, told us she'd have Katie Cork back today. She had her back last Monday night for the first training session, a full training session. How important was she today? Unbelievable. Rachel Leahy, 12 months ago, her crew sheet was gone. Unbelievable work to get back today. We needed the 20 players today. The panel is only going to get stronger. You know, we had players playing for the senior B's today who had a great win. You know, this thing is going in the right direction, and we're very, very happy with what we did today. I'm so, so proud of the girls.
And rightly so. Now, all the momentum that you've gained from today, you're going to need to take into your next game, because that's a way to carry. But look, I mean, had you been coming into it off the back of another loss, things might look very different. Now the players have their confidence back. Now they know they have to up it again against an All-Ireland contender.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Look, the confidence is on the floor. No matter what you're doing with them or who's talking to them or what psychologist you get in, you know, players need to win games to get confidence back. And, you know, we played a couple of challenge games and in the last couple of weeks, and, you know, we started to get scores and we started to win. And I think that started to give the players belief, and, you know, that little man in your head that would be doubting things, you know. We told him where to go during the week, and we told him at half time again to tell him where to go, because they know themselves. We know we've good players, but they're young as well, a lot of them. A lot of them are making their championship debuts out today, or championship starts. Like, that's fantastic for them. They surely they will take massive confidence out of today. Look, we're going into next week against Kerry. Kerry won today as well. It's not a must-win game, I don't think, you know, but I suppose we're going to go down there. We had a very disappointing performance against Kerry in the National League. I think you'll see a different Cork again next week. Hopefully we'll kick on. You know, we might be able to get a few more players in as well. You know, we have to assess a few injuries. We'll probably have a couple of knocks after today, because it was a really tough game out there. But look, we're very, very happy with where we are today. Our objective coming down here was to get the 3 points. I don't think too many gave us much of a chance, you know, because of what Waterford had done to us in the league and the way Waterford had played in the league. And we hadn't won a match since January 20th or something like that. But look, we're delighted. We'll go into Kerry now next week. We can have a right cut off them. We know how seriously good they are. But we can test our newer players again. Does our method of play suit against Kerry? And hopefully it will. And look, we're looking forward now. We're not looking back. There's no one talking about Division 2 now. Everybody's talking about you have a championship win under your belt. We're looking forward now for the rest of the year. One more win gets us into Munster final, probably. And that's where we want to be on the May 18th.
Excellent stuff. Well done. We'll talk to you then.
Thanks very much, Sean.
An incredible piece there by a reasonably emotional Shane Ronan. Next up, we hear from Waterford boss Pat Sullivan after their defeat.
I'm here with the Waterford manager after a disappointing result, defeat to Cork in the opening round of the Munster Senior Football Championship. Pat Sullivan, can I just put it to you that so high have your standards risen over the last number of years in Waterford that that's a game you look back on and regret a lot of missed opportunities?
Yeah, most definitely. Look, we had a lot of snapshots in the first half. I think we had something like 20 shots in the first half versus 12 shots from Cork. But our shot selection and our positioning in that forward line where we were taking them wasn't where we were working on with the last couple of weeks and what we did in the Galway game. And that cost us definitely in the first half. Missed some simple frees in the first half as well. And fairness to Katie Quirk, she was 100% from the other side, and that was the difference.
Goals are always important in such tight games between yourself and Cork, not just today but always down through the years. When the fact that Laura Manny got that one, was that crucial? Was that a kind of a turning point?
Yeah, I gave him the cushion. We always struggled to get back. We got back to 2 points when we came, they go back to four, and the two of them throwed all day with them 2 and 3 points. The goal was a big difference, and I gave him a cushion. But we had enough chances from points. Like, I think we scored something like 11 points there, probably could have had 16, 17 points, no problem. And that wouldn't have been disrespectful to Cork. That was what was there on offer for us today, and we didn't take it.
And is that the thing, Pat? It's frustration more than anything else coming out of today's defeat.
Yeah, 100%. And look, it puts us under a bit of pressure now because we don't have to go to Tip next week, which will be a battle. Because in fairness to Tip, we've always only been a point between us each. So whoever wins that now, we're back in a driving seat, and whoever loses are gone to the Munster Championship. So we have a massive task ahead of us now, and we have to obviously win and Tip and get the carry and get the result to get the Munster final.
You've had your backs to the wall a couple of times already this year, but you've come out fighting and you've gotten a response from these players. This team has been growing over a number of years. It's a big challenge, yes, but one that they think they'll relish.
Oh yeah, look, we're far from dead, that's for sure. We'll just focus on next week now and park what we have, because it comes around within 7 days, so we have to get back on the horse by Monday and, you know, show where we go next week. And look, Cork, in fairness, I've improved a lot since the league as well, so in fairness they're moving through the gears. We just need to get back on where we were last week or 2 weeks ago against Galway and take it from there.
Thanks very much, Pat.
Thank you.
Great stuff from Gerard there. Well, after Cork's 112-18 point loss in Clarny today, I caught up with Aaron Prendergast of Gaelic Fan TV, where he hosts his podcast with plenty of informative GAA discussion, which has all things the Rebels. Just don't judge him on his Dublin accent. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by @GaelicFanTV, otherwise known as Aaron Prendergast. Aaron, well, first things first, I never thought I'd hear a dub on Cork Radio.
Yeah, sure, that's it. I suppose stranger things have happened. But as I was saying to you off air, I was ready to break out the full Cork kit if Kerry had won this game, so I was fully in support of Cork for this one, but unfortunately it wasn't meant to be.
Well, if you were fully in support of us, you must have been fairly happy there with the first 3 to 4 minutes. Cork 1-1 to no score up. It was looking promising for the Rebels there.
It absolutely was, yeah. And I was saying to you during the week as well, like, Cork seemed to have this weird thing against better teams and in specifically against Kerry, where they do seem to raise their game quite a lot. Like, they obviously done it last year when they played Kerry. You think back to obviously 2020 as well when they won that game, and it was no different here. Like, the game in Fitzgerald Stadium didn't seem to faze them whatsoever. Start very strong. Paul Walsh gets a goal. Connor Corbett gets a point. They did another goal chance, I think, before that as well. Chris Oak Jones had a big chance. And yeah, Cork started very, very strong. And Kerry looked very rattled and rusty. I suppose Kerry have probably, you know, they haven't played obviously for 3-4 weeks since that Galway game. That Galway game was probably a bit of a non-event as well. So I think, yeah, Kerry just looked a little bit rusty. Like, even David Clifford, like Daniel O'Mahony, the amount of times he turned them over, he must have turned them over 3, 4, 5 times in a row. It was quite incredible to see, to be honest. I haven't seen too many players do that to David Clifford. But yeah, like, I suppose the disappointing thing maybe from a Cork perspective was that at half time, Cork were only a point in front, when in reality they probably needed to be 3, 4, maybe 5 points in front, just so they had something more to hold on to going into the second half.
As a dub looking on, what do you make of this Kerry side at the moment? They seem to have a fair bit of frailties maybe compared to other years?
They definitely do, yeah. But at the same time, I remember thinking that last year with Kerry, like when they played Cork, they barely got over the line in that game. Then I think a week later, they went out and absolutely trashed Loud. So Kerry do seem, and specifically under Jack O'Connor, like even if you go back to Jack O'Connor in 2009 or go back to, you know, the early years of Jack O'Connor, Kerry often used to do this where they'd look quite sluggish in Munster or the qualifiers or whatever it may be. And then when it gets to the All-Ireland series, that's when they really click into gear. Like, so I wouldn't really read too much into it. Like, I think the most important thing for Kerry was just to get over the line. I don't think you'll see them make the same mistakes that they made in the first half against bigger teams. And I think, like, looking at Kerry now, they're going to play Clare, Waterford in a Munster final. They're going to win that quite comfortably. So it's one of them where Kerry are definitely probably a lot more vulnerable than we think, or we would have thought maybe after they won the All-Ireland a couple of years ago. But at the same time, you can't get carried away too much because they're still going to be thereabouts when it comes to, you know, July or whatever.
Yeah, I'd say both sides would be slightly disappointed that Jack will certainly run rings off the lads during the week. I'd say that not their best performance by any stretch. What did you think of Cork coming into today off the back of I'd say less than average, worse than average league campaign?
Yeah, like I suppose it was an interesting campaign in Division 2. Like they started obviously very slow, then they got going towards the end and put a couple of good results together and a couple of good wins together. But I think all in all, like I think they will be fairly happy with how this performance went. And I think Cork are that type of side that when they play lesser teams, they seem to struggle. But when they play bigger teams, they seem to do very, very well. Like even against Limerick the last day, behind the half time, and then turned it around and won. So yeah, it is interesting with Cork. Like they must be very weird to support at the best of times, because you probably go into this game not having much hope, and then they give you loads of hope. But then Cork go out next week, or in the first game of the group stages against, I don't know, Westmead or something, and lose. So it's very, yeah, I'd say it's very odd following Cork at the best of times.
Who impressed you most from the Cork side today looking on?
I'd have to say Brian Hurley. I thought he was outstanding. I think he kicked 8 points in total. Connor Corbett was decent as well, 2 points from him, but I think he missed a few chances in the first half that you probably would have fancied him to score. And look, Daniel O'Mahony, I know Clifford probably came more and more and grew more and more into the game, but some of those turnovers in the first half were absolutely brilliant. And I don't think it's the first time as well that Daniel O'Mahony's done a great job on Clifford as well. So, yeah, probably single out them three is probably the big performers for Cork.
Yeah, Daniel seems to be a very underrated footballer. I mean, going toe to toe and getting the better of the best footballer in the country, I mean, it's probably not much of a debate there. Maybe as a dub, you might say, Fintan. But, I mean, it was absolutely incredible. A word to our hurlers tomorrow. How do you think they might shape up against Waterford?
Yeah, I'd fancy Cork anyway to win. I do think there is a lot of interest and talk going into it. Like a lot of people are fancying Cork to win out the gate and win by 10 plus or 8-9 points, and for it to be very comfortable. Yeah. I don't really see that happening. I think Waterford will bring a game plan. Davy Fitz, you know, will be ready to spoil the party. You know, I think even in the lead up to it, you know, there's a lot of talk from the Waterford camp about being wrote off and all this. You just know it suits them down to the ground. Like they've got Desi Hutchinson back in, Jamie Barron's obviously back in, Stephen Bennett's there. So it'll give Cork a good game for it. But I think for Cork, like you would expect them to have too much firepower going down the home stretch.
Yeah, I mean, like Pat Ryan kind of came out in local media during the week and said, we'll be going for goals and we need goals to win the match. And maybe that's a bit of mental mind games with Davy Fitz, you know. So Davy will have a game plan to prepare for goals, and then they'll just pop him over the bar from long range with the points. But I think with Alan Connolly up there and Pat Horgan, yeah, we will in fact be going for goals. And I'd expect us to be getting 3 or 4, to be honest, tomorrow with the firepower we have.
100%, yeah. And as you said, like Alan Connolly's coming in there and very, very good form. Like, I think a hat-trick in the last two games.
Against Wexford, an awfully mind, but it's still very impressive nonetheless.
Yeah. Then again, I think Waterford got beat by Wexford, so it might give you know, you wouldn't be surprised maybe to see something similar happen again. But yeah, like Alan Connolly's going in there in great form, and like the amount of like top class forwards that Cork have, like I think that's almost been maybe an issue for Pat Ryan, maybe, and a little bit Kieran Kingston as well, is that there's so many top class forwards that it's one of them things where how do you find the balance between them all? Like you have Conor Lehan, you've got Patrick Horgan, Jack O'Connor, Dara Fitzgibbon, Seamus Harnedy. Like you've so many there, and I think that'll be the interesting thing to see with Pat Ryan tomorrow, is what six forwards he goes with.
Yeah, I can see Jack O'Connor maybe making his way into the forward line somewhere there. I'm not too sure who'll be taken out, but be interesting stuff to see. Aaron at Gaelic Fan TV, thanks so much for joining us here on the Bigger Red Bench.
Absolutely. Yeah, cheers for having me.
Appreciate it. Great stuff. Thanks to Aaron once more. Just about have time for this one. It's just after coming in. We have reaction here from Cork boss John Cleary after he was speaking to Tommy Rooney after their loss to Kerry.
John Cleary, your Cork side have come down to Killarney today with a plan. It nearly came off. How close were you really to turning Kerry over today? A 3-point defeat in the end.
I thought we should have been more ahead at half time, particularly the first 20 minutes where we went at them. I thought we played very well, but maybe we just stood off there for 5 or 6 minutes around the 21st minute and let Kerry back into the game when we had them really going backwards. But look, against a very good team like Kerry, we knew we had to come out of the blocks quickly, because if they started getting the ball in quickly to their forwards, they'd shoot the lights out. So in fairness, our lads, they stuck to the game plan, and we were disappointed we weren't more ahead at half time. Second half then, I think, it was a bit of nip and tuck, and I thought we had a few poor turnovers which cost us. We missed a couple of scores. Now I know Kerry missed scores in the first half as well, and they just about maybe deserved to get over the line. They had that bit of class to get the scores when the real crunch came there and towards the end.
Yeah, in the first half, the first 20 minutes in particular, when the plan is working and you opened up Kerry a few times there and you had a couple of chances, it must feel like, right, we're on the right path here, the lads are listening to the plan, it's all working. What happened then? What happened with the bit of standoffishness that came into the game? We obviously had that 6 minute spell late on where you obviously had set up in a certain way, but Kerry were able to keep the ball. Is it hard to kind of snap out of that then?
I don't think it is. I don't. We certainly didn't change our game plan from the line anyway, and maybe the lads were trying to take a breather at that stage. I don't know, and it's something, look, we'll just look on. We didn't get a chance to do it at half time because it was a case of trying to get ready for the second half. But from where I was standing there in the first half, I felt if we kept going at Kerry, kept going at it. And now it was a hot day out there, and even at half time our lads, were glad of the breather, and it did cost us in the end. And I said, being disappointed coming in at half time just to point up, because we felt we'd played well.
Yeah, no, it certainly felt like that watching up on the sideline. Are you feeling like this progression is moving forwards? You still, I know you lost today, but the turnaround in the league, the couple of weeks now to the round robin, what is progress now next? What's the next stage for you?
So look, we'll see where it goes. Look, we got off to a bad start of the year after making progress last year, but in fairness then, lads had to come out fighting, and that's what happened. And we had the last four matches in the league and the Limerick match, and we had five reasonable performances. It's into the Sam Maguire now, our big thing is can we keep consistent? We've got to, like, we were written off coming down here today, and I didn't read much of it now, but anyway, I was at home, my daughters were telling me that, we were in for a bit of a pasting here today. And look, within the camp and within the group, we said we'd give it our best shot and see where it would take us, and we felt we had a shot at winning this game today, and just fell up short to a very, very good Kerry team. They'll be there thereabouts, and all Ireland Day, I can see them, you know what I mean, on their day. They're the best team in the country and probably in the top three without a doubt.
Hard luck, John, and best of luck.
All right, Tom, no problem.
Great stuff from John. Time is up here on the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey signing off on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Best of luck to our hurlers tomorrow. Steve G is on the way next. Come on, the Rebels.
The Big Red Bench.
The Big Red Bench.
On Cork's Good Times.
Red FM.
Red FM.